Because that's the bottom line.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Monday, May the 1st edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. On today's show, there's a new name for Commonwealth Stadium, as if anybody cares. Boom Williams proves he made a big mistake. The NFL draft concludes. The NBA playoffs continue. The Reds somehow win a Sunday afternoon game, heading into a huge four-game series this week. One major league pitcher proves that he's a complete moron. And we take a big underdog in Major League Baseball tonight after going 5-2 in our underdog so far this year. So let's go.
You are listening live.
Commonwealth Stadium is no more. They haven't taken their wrecking balls to the place. They're simply going to rename the place Kroger Field. And yes, insert your Kroger Plus card jokes here. Insert your Cost Cutter brand jokes here. I'm sure they won't be very fresh and original since you'll be the only one coming up with them. My thing is this, isn't Kroger based in Cincinnati? Wouldn't you think they want to do maybe something from Cincinnati first? Maybe Ohio State? Okay, let's go with Kentucky. Maybe they're trying to reach that SEC fan base. Who knows? But have fun next year, Big Blue Nation, at Kroger Field. I'm sure Kroger is going to make billions off this little venture. But then again, why are we talking about this? It's May the 1st in Lexington, Kentucky. There's nothing else to talk about locally. And for some reason, I'm contractually obligated to start with local news. So there you go. Kroger Field, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully the lines at Kroger Field won't be as bad as the lines at the customer service desk at the Kroger I go to, which literally takes 25 minutes to get through. But I digress. Not that I'm bitter.
He's always like that. He's always telling fibs, lying. Wait, when do you ever tell the truth?
You're a good-looking guy.
What?
Lied again, didn't I?
One player who will not be playing on Kroger Field next year is Boom Williams, a former Kentucky running back. Now, after going undrafted, he signed with the Cincinnati Bengals after the draft. Of the undrafted underclassmen, 28 went undrafted this year, proving that those 28, including Boom Williams, got some very bad advice. But you have to ask yourself this if you're Boom Williams. Did you turn pro for the money? Did you turn pro because people were telling you turn pro? Or did you turn pro because Benny Snell is simply a better player than you are and you didn't want to get shown up and you got scared? Those are all questions Boom Williams has to ask himself today. Because if you ask me, he was scared. Don't forget, Boom Williams quit this team 2 seasons ago mid-season because he didn't think he was getting enough playing time. Just saying. John Toth, another Kentucky player who was projected, I guess in his own mind, to be going in the draft, did not get drafted, and to this moment, as of Monday morning, still has not signed with a team. One guy who has signed for a tryout, Patrick Toles, with the Houston Texans. Is he going to be a tight end? Is he going to be a quarterback? Lord knows, Houston needs as many quarterbacks as they can get. Even if they did just draft Deshaun Watson, which they paid a very heavy price to do, and still have the macho man Tom Savage himself. But how much does it say about Kentucky football that Kentucky had 0 players taken to the draft and Western Kentucky had 3 players taken in the draft? That's all you need to know, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, the NFL draft basically takes an entire weekend now. Bengals fans will be happy to know they have another criminal running back. Well, I shouldn't say criminal, but someone who's had brushes with the law, Joe Mixon, the guy who we've talked about for months about slugging that woman in Oklahoma, is now a Cincinnati Bengal running back. You notice they drafted this kid on Friday night, which is the perfect time to draft a guy with problems. Why? You're out of the news cycle. Nobody's paying attention to the news on Saturday morning. You know when people aren't paying attention to the news? Monday through Friday. If they had drafted this kid at the end of the first round on Thursday night, they would have caught a lot more hell for it on Friday than they're going to catch for it today. 3 days later. But the NFL draft, full of its chicanery and shenanigans, Drew Pearson going full heel WWE style, clowning the Eagles fans, the Jets representative, spelling Jets, J-E-T-E, Jets, I kid you not, and of course, an orangutan made one draft pick sending NFL Network's Mike Mayock into a tizzy. But of course, the SEC always rules. 53 draft picks from SEC schools. You can say from all SEC schools not named Kentucky, because Kentucky didn't have any. So of the 13 others, 53 players were drafted. More than any other conference.
Bama's going to hit that field. They're going to row. They're going to row over them. Bama's the best in the country. And that's all there is to it. You can't beat the best. And Bama is the best.
People still buzzing over the fact that the Bears moved up to number 2 to get Mitchell Trubisky, a basically unproven quarterback. Is he Mitch? Is he Mitchell? How come he only started 1 year at North Carolina? Yeah, that guy. Mike Glennon, who signed big money free agent contract in the offseason with the Bears, was quoted today as saying he was shocked and he feels cheated. Well, welcome to the life of the NFL, Mike Glennon. What have you proven in the league so far? Not a whole hell of a lot. So why are you complaining? Take your money and be happy they gave you that much money. But the Niners made off like bandits. Chicago gave them a king's ransom for the number 2 pick, and they got the exact guy turning down to number 3 that they wanted in the first place. Seems like the Bears panicked and paid a heavy price for a guy that they could have gotten without giving away the house to get him.
If I gave you a dollar, you could keep most of the change, because all I really want is a quarterback.
Some other little draft tidbits that caught my eye. The Cleveland Browns selected Caleb Brantley, who we talked about last week, was going to be a early to mid-round selection, but then got busted for domestic violence in Florida, and his stock fell precipitously. So the Cleveland Browns, of all teams, take him in the 6th round and immediately have said, we're probably going to release him anyway. So if you're going to release him, why are you taking him in the 6th round? We all know the answer to this. You're not going to release him. You're just doing this to placate the fans, to placate the people who are raising hell on social media. I can't believe the Cleveland Browns took a domestic violence violator. Oh, you know, shaking their fists at them. But my thing is this. If you're going to draft a guy, don't say 5 minutes later that you're probably going to release him anyway. You're wasting everyone's time, and you're giving Caleb Brantley money that he doesn't deserve. We all know you're keeping him. Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. You're not cutting this guy unless he gets thrown in jail. And even then, it's not 100% you'll cut him then.
Words of wisdom. Drop that zero and get with the hero.
We've gotten to the point in the NFL draft where if you want to take a quarterback, you have to give up everything to get him. We talked about Trubisky. The Texans had to give up a whole lot to get Deshaun Watson. Before that, the Kansas City Chiefs traded a king's ransom to get Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech. How many of you out there saw Texas Tech play last year? Exactly. I didn't either. There is no more valuable player in all of sport than the NFL quarterback. And believe me, if you saw that draft, you saw what you had to pay to get a good one. And in the case of the 3 that went in the first round this year, there's no guarantees that any of them are worth a darn, can even play in the league. It is a huge risk trading up to get these quarterbacks, but it seems like every team feels like they have to do so. The 3rd round Russell Wilsons and the 4th round Dak Prescott's just simply don't grow on trees.
Rico. Suave.
You want to feel old? Ken Griffey Sr. played on the Big Red Machine back in the 70s. Ken Griffey Jr. played for the Mariners in the 90s, then played for the Reds in the 2000s. Ken Griffey Jr.'s son went undrafted over the weekend, but did sign with the Colts after the draft. Yeah, I feel really old now.
Ooh. Learn to love it. Diamonds are forever. And so are the 4 horsemen.
And the world champion again, Ric Flair.
After the draft, the over-under win totals came out for NFL teams in Vegas. And of course, the Patriots had the highest win total as Vegas projected them to win 11 games. Immediately, the public pounced on this, and the line now for the Patriots is up to 11.5. There's a shocker for you. The public masses flocking on the favorites. I can't believe it. But according to the odds makers in Vegas, the number one seeds for the NFL playoffs next January are going to be New England and Seattle. In other words, same as it ever was.
tuned for all the excitement of the world champion Cincinnati Reds. Reds Radio is produced solely by the broadcast department of the Cincinnati Reds Incorporated.
Major League Baseball. Cincinnati Reds 5-4 victors on Sunday afternoon. No thanks to Bronson Arroyo, who went four innings and gave up four runs. Somehow his ERA is 7.20. Somehow he's still on the team. Somehow he's still on the rotation. End it for this guy, please. I'm sick of everyone saying, oh, he's such a great guy. Leader in the clubhouse. Blah, blah, blah. He can't produce on the field. You know, I'd want comedians and feel-good guys in my clubhouse, too. But if they suck, I can't have them on my team. Anyway, Arroyo got the Reds down 4-0. Somehow the Reds bullpen held on, and the Reds won the game 5-4, despite Mike Leake, a former Red, giving up only one run in six innings. His ERA right now 1.35, but I'll guarantee you the Reds have no problem with that, knowing that they traded Mike Leake for Adam Duvall, who had over 30 home runs last year and has 7 already this year. Speaking of Duvall, he went 4-5 yesterday after going 4 of his previous 35 before yesterday. So 1 month in, the Reds are 11-13, which I can honestly say is better than expectations. They're only 2 games behind the Cubs. Now, let's not get carried away. They're not going to win the division. They're not going to make the playoffs. But they are better this year, mainly because they have a better bullpen. And it's being used a little bit better by Brian Price, who doesn't have to stick to this Aroldis Chapman in the ninth and the ninth only, and throwing out complete clowns in the seventh and eighth innings, the Kevin Gregs of the world, the Jumbo Diazes of the world, and watching them get bombed while Aroldis Chapman becomes useless because the Reds have blown a lead in the seventh and eighth. Last year at this time, the Reds were 9-15. That's 2 games worse, but they had also allowed 23 more runs than they have so far this year. A marked improvement. Raisel Iglesias, 2 innings save yesterday. That's another part of this bullpen that has improved. Brian Price has said, hey, if I can't use Iglesias on back-to-back days, maybe I can throw him for a couple innings when I do use him. Devin Mesoraco somehow has played 2 games in the last 3 days. Yes, it's a miracle to me, too. Scott Schebler, 8 home runs right now, including 11 hits in his last 6 games. He's still only hitting .244. Zach Cozart has been moved up to the number 2 spot in the lineup because Jose Peraza has been terrible. We'll get to him in a second. But of course, in true bottom line Zach Cozart style, since being moved up to the number 1 spot, he's 1-for-10, and he's seen his average go last week from .407 at the beginning of the week to .352. Don't say we didn't warn you, because we do every year. And of course, we have to get to the top 3 in the lineup. We'll get to Joey Votto in a second, but to start the year, Billy Hamilton, Jose Peraza. They've been batting 1-2 for a majority of the season. In 200 plate appearances in the month of April, they combined had 9 walks. Billy Hamilton had 7. Jose Peraza had 2. That's in 200 plate appearances. So 4.5% of the time, when these guys stroll to the plate, they get a walk. And when you're hitting as lousy as these guys are average-wise, Hamilton is .213. Peraza is .226. When you can't hit for average and you refuse to walk, yeah, it doesn't spell very well for you in terms of staying in the lineup and staying at the top of the lineup. But that gets us to our old friend Joey Votto, our old friend who everybody in Cincinnati hates. And I have one question for Joey Votto right now. Is he listening to the people? Is he listening to the fans and the media? Yes, this is you, Marty Brenneman. Is he listening to all these people who are sick and tired of seeing him walk? Why is that? Because he's not walking anymore. Yes, Joey Votto had the game-winning RBI yesterday in the eighth inning on a single. He's now hitting .256. And if you know anything about Joey Votto, you know his second half numbers are often much better than his first half numbers. But so far this year, he's hitting .256. On-base percentage, .337. This is from a guy in his career is hitting .311 batting average and his on-base percentage, .423. One of the top 12 in the history of Major League Baseball. Joey Votto is on pace to walk 74 times. He has had 6 seasons in which he has walked 90 or more times. And he has to put up with the constant belittlement from guys like Marty Brenneman that he doesn't care about on-base percentage. And he doesn't care how many walks Joey Votto gets as long as he knocks in runs, because that's what he's getting paid $20-plus million a year to do. My thing to Joey Votto is this. Come back to us, Joey. Those of us who follow baseball analytically, those of us who watch, who understand how to read numbers, we miss you. Come back to us. It's okay to take a walk. It's okay to piss off Marty Brenneman. You're not pissing us off. You're not pissing the sabermetric community off. I can promise you that. And like I said earlier, Joey Votto has always been a second-half player, especially the last couple years. Look at his second-half numbers the last 2 years. They've been insane compared to his first-half numbers. But even in those lousy first halves of the seasons, he's walked more than being on pace for 74 in a year. So Joey Votto, if I can send you a message right now, just come on home, son. All is forgiven. It's okay to start taking pitches again. You don't have to look up at Marty Brenneman every time you swing on a 3-0 pitch. I hope that he isn't doing this on purpose just to placate the media and the fans. But the numbers say he's listening, and that does not bode well for his numbers at the end of the season, but we'll see.
If I could trade him, I would trade him yesterday. Hell, I can lose 94 games without you just as easily as I could lose 94 games with you. I don't care about the OPS. I don't care about none of that. This club made a bad deal when they signed Joey Votto to a 10-year contract, and he's going to make $22 million this year, and either next year or the following year is going to make $25 million. There is no sanity on God's earth that justifies this being a good contract.
Okay, well, Bryce Harper's probably going to make $30 million.
I don't give a damn about Bryce Harper. You're talking about Washington, D.C. Why don't you bring up Mike Trout in Los Angeles?
Well, okay.
We're done with this, Scott. We can argue all night long, and you're dead wrong, and you're never going to convince me that this contract is a good contract.
Tonight, the Pittsburgh Pirates come to Cincinnati. Both teams, 11-13, tied for last in the division. But good news, they're both only 2 games behind. Garrett Cole for the Pirates, 3.60 ERA. Amir Garrett for the Reds, 5.09, a horrible last outing. Pittsburgh has won 3 of their last 4. Reds have lost 8 of their last 10. Pirates a small favorite, minus 120, which means the Reds are about plus 110. Keep in mind, on April 10th, 11th, and 12th, the Reds swept the Pirates in Pittsburgh. And keep in mind that Garrett Cole is terrible against the Reds. The Pirates are 0-8 in the last 8 games that Cole has started versus Cincinnati. But it's tough to go against the Pirates tonight. Cole is a hot pitcher. Last 3 games for both pitchers, Cole is 1.89 ERA, Garrett 6.88. On April 12th, Garrett pitched against the Pirates, gave up 2 runs in 6 2/3 innings, but that seems like a long time ago now. Cole's last outing, he gave up 0 runs in 7 innings against the Cubs. And keep an eye out for former single-A catcher John Borman for the Pirates. 2 days ago, he was in single-A, and the Pirates said, you know what, forget it. We need a catcher. We're going down to single-A and getting a guy. So keep an eye out for him as he makes his debut tonight. We won't touch this game with a 10-foot pole. Obviously, the Reds being a small dog, you see some value there. But it is extremely difficult to go against Pittsburgh, A, with sweep revenge, knowing that they lost 3 in a row to Cincinnati earlier this season, and Garrett Cole is simply the better pitcher than Amir Garrett, and it's not even close.
And then to get into broadcasting, where I think my first couple of years were used to jam Radio Free Europe broadcasts, so that was good too. You know, I mean, at least it was a start, you know?
Other Major League Baseball, ladies and gentlemen, there was a very interesting game in Washington yesterday, if you can call a baseball game interesting at this point of the season. The Nationals beat the Mets 23-5. Now, why was this game so interesting? On one side of the field, you had the Nationals, arguably the best team in baseball. They had Anthony Rendon, 6 hits, 10 RBIs. Ryan Zimmerman having a breakthrough season to marvel the times when he was a big home run hitter earlier this decade. You've got Bryce Harper setting a major league record for runs scored in the month of April with 32, beating Larry Walker of the Colorado Rockies in 1997. That was his MVP year. And believe me, that was pre-Humidor in Colorado. So they were scoring runs like you wouldn't believe in Colorado. The Nationals have scored over 14 runs 5 times so far this season. And they scored more runs last week than the Kansas City Royals have scored all season. Unless the team busts, drive straight into a river, there's no way the Nationals won't make the playoffs because the Braves are down, the Phillies are down, the Marlins are the Marlins, and the Mets, who were supposed to be contenders, seemingly can't get out of their own way. And that's how we go to the other side of the field, the New York Mets. Noah Syndergaard, one of the top 10 starting pitchers in all of Major League Baseball, and he started the year very well. All of a sudden, last Wednesday, they were going to skip his scheduled start against Atlanta. Syndergaard said his arm was hurting, but he refused to take an MRI. And the Mets said, okay. So he throws around in the bullpen on Saturday and says, hey, I'm ready to go Sunday. And the Mets say, okay. So what happens? Syndergaard goes out there on Sunday, and he's terrible, and he's out in the game in the second inning, leading to this 23-5 debacle. So now this morning it comes out that Syndergaard has a partially torn lat muscle, and he's going to miss months, not weeks. And whatever you've heard so far in terms of how much time he's going to miss, add time to it, because I'm sorry, you don't return from a torn lat muscle in just a couple of weeks, I can promise you. And then after the game yesterday, Terry Collins, the manager of the Mets for now, because he will not be the manager of the Mets this time next year, no matter what they say, he was asked by the media, should they have given an MRI to Noah Syndergaard earlier this week when he was complaining of arm pain? And Terry Collins, as only he can do, says, you think? You think we should have done that? Yes, we should have. Train wreck in New York City. The Nationals are going to coast to the National League Eastern Division title. They should start resting their players for the playoffs right now, because it's going to take an absolute act of God to keep the Nationals from winning their division at this point. But hey, leave it to the toothpick himself, Dusty Baker. He can get any team to the playoffs. Heck, he got to the Reds to the playoffs. He got the Cubs to the playoffs. He got the Giants to the playoffs. He's gotten every team he's ever managed to the playoffs. Funny thing is, once he gets to those playoffs, you talk about underachieving. Dusty Baker is at the top of that list. But then again, he's not up there with Bobby Cox. But that's a little bit personal to me.
Bob Uecker, yes. The announcer, can call a home run from Bob Uecker, the player. What would it sound like?
This ball is really hit. I can't believe it. He actually, I can't go on. He actually hit it.
Other baseball, Eric Thames has 11 home runs for the Milwaukee Brewers. He hasn't hit any for a few days, which is disturbing. Although he's still on pace for over 60 this year. But Cubs pitching coach Chris Bosio came out over the weekend and said what we're all thinking, saying that when Thames was playing with the Blue Jays 5 years ago, he was just an ordinary player. Then he goes to Korea, and he comes back 5 years later, and he's noticeably a lot bigger physically, and now he's hitting the ball 500 feet, making Bosio wonder if he's on steroids or some kind of PED or not. Now, the Cubs have already said that they're pissed at Bosio, and he shouldn't have said this, but I'm sorry. Bosio's saying what all of us are thinking and what some of us have already put down as fact. Eric Thames has figured out how to get bigger and how to pass these drug tests, because they gave him one last week. So if you're Chris Bosio of the Cubs, yeah, keep your mouth shut, because you can't say things like that. But he's 100% right. Eric Thames is on something, and it's not just a coincidence that he comes back 5 years later from Korea, and all of a sudden, he's Babe Ruth.
I never wanted to take time away from the first string catcher. I mean, McCarver, all those guys were younger than I was. Let them guys do that, you know? You know, bullpen stuff was great for me. I was happy. Being paid under the minimum was a little aggravating, but other than that.
Couple other baseball notes. We see that Derek Jeter and Jeb Bush, there's a combo for you, now they're backing out of buying the Marlins after they were giving the go-ahead to purchase them last week. I'm shocked that somehow both of these guys couldn't come up with the money for that. I'm absolutely shocked. Another thing I've noticed over the weekend, the Yankees have a pitcher/infielder named Brian Mitchell. And apparently, he goes between pitching and first base depending on hitting matchups. Which begs me to wonder, why don't more teams do this? Why can't you find two relief pitchers that can just go back and forth, maybe between left field and pitching, depending on the matchup? Get one left-handed guy, one right-handed guy, and just go back and forth. I never understood why more teams couldn't do that. But then again, I'm not a baseball manager at all. The NBA. We are now into the round of the conference semifinals. After on Sunday, the Los Angeles Clippers pulled an absolutely Clippers stunt by losing for the fifth year in a row in a series in which they had a lead. The Clippers are obviously done. And if you watched any of that game on Sunday, you could tell that Chris Paul and Doc Rivers do not get along with each other whatsoever. It literally was like they would walk past each other and one of them would say, "Your mama," and then the other would say, "Oh no, your mama." That's the body language they were giving off. Another game yesterday, the Washington Bullets / Wizards knocked out Isaiah Thomas's front tooth, but still lost to the Boston Celtics, going down 0-1 in that series. We see that series going at least 6 games, so don't get too shook up over the first one. Two series will start tonight, Toronto at Cleveland. Very few people giving Toronto a chance in this one. And the most interesting conference semifinal matchup, Houston and San Antonio. San Antonio, who has seemingly underachieved in the playoffs for the last few years. Can they finally make it to a conference final to face Golden State, which is what they should have been doing the last 2 years but couldn't make it? We'll see. The numbers say San Antonio, but the wise guys are all over Houston in this series for some reason.
You know, I want to give a shout out to Ernie, to what's the coach in Houston?
Rick Adams, man.
Okay.
Wait, the first part of giving a shout out is knowing the person that you're shouting out.
Apparently, someone in the NBA tried to compare Draymond Green to Charles Barkley, and Draymond Green was having none of it, saying, "Hell no. I'm not a role model," or whatever Barkley used to say back in those 80s commercials. By the way, on the court, Draymond Green couldn't hold a candle to what Charles Barkley was back in the day. Charles Barkley is looked at as a clown who's on TV now. What people don't remember and what people don't understand, he was one of the top 20 players in the history of the NBA. And if you look at player efficiency ratings in the history of the NBA, Charles Barkley is number 10 all time. And I'm looking at the top 250 list. I don't see Draymond Green on here. Then again, he may not have enough games played to qualify. But the only players that you've heard of that are ahead of Charles Barkley all time in efficiency in the NBA, and I'll go down this list: Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Shaq, David Robinson, who for my money might be the most underrated player in the history of the NBA, David Robinson. Wilt Chamberlain, Chris Paul, number 6, he's very underrated as well. Bob Pettit, Kevin Durant, and some guy named Neil Johnson. I'm sorry, I don't know who he is. But he played in the 50s, and apparently his nicknames, according to basketballreference.com, were Gabby and Ole Haas. I can't make this stuff up, people. So Draymond Green, if you want to be compared on the court to Charles Barkley, you should welcome that with open arms. Because to be honest, you couldn't even hold a candle to the guy on the court.
Happy birthday to my youngest son, Shakir. Love you, cuz. Love you too, Shakir.
Well, happy birthday.
This is the first day of 40 games and 40 nights. You can say hello to a different kid every day.
Well, bad news for fans of Lonzo and LaVar Ball. Old man LaVar Ball is very upset that his kids will not be getting that billion-dollar shoe contract that he was begging to get. I can't believe nobody gave him that much money. And in other news regarding LaVar Ball, the coach at the high school where all 3 of his kids have played or are playing or will be playing, that high school fired their coach last week. And of course, all fingers point to LaVar Ball being the reason why that coach was fired. And if you saw those highlights of that team this year, when the Ball brothers were just shooting every single time they got the ball, you can probably see why coaching that team would be a complete headache, because there's no organization or ball passing skills whatsoever. It's just get it and shoot it. So the LaVar Ball drama continues, while George Raveling, who's about 100 years old himself, came out and said that LaVar Ball is the worst thing to happen to basketball in 100 years, and he would know since he's about that old. But do you think these NBA teams care? Of course they don't. Lonzo Ball is either going number 1 or number 2, no matter who wins the lottery, and no matter who's there, because they can't afford to pass on it. And LaVar Ball knows it, and that's why he's doing all this stuff.
I want winners.
Greed is good.
Cash. Cold. That's what I need.
And now with his picks for today's games, the man who's right 52% of the time, smooth, Jimmy Apollo.
Well, I don't know. Denver.
Woohoo! Denver! Yeah!
Winning's one of those rare commodities on Earth that money cannot buy until you called me.
All right, it is Mac Daddy Stogie time. We head to the world of baseball again tonight. On the season, our baseball selections, 5 wins and 2 losses. Keep in mind, we're taking an underdog every single night. And if you had bet $1 on each of our picks this season so far, you would have made a profit of $5.72 so far this year. And all that is documented both on our website, bottomlinelexington.podbean.com, and in every podcast in which we pick a game for that night. So you can't say we're just making this up after the fact. Tonight at Chavez Ravine, Dodger Stadium, the Giants and the Dodgers will face up in a rivalry game, if you want to call it that. The Giants, the poor old Giants, 9-17 on the season. What happened to them? Madison Bumgarner plays Evel Knievel, and he's out. Buster Posey got knocked in the head. He's missed some time. Not a good start for the Giants. And the bad news for them just keeps getting worse. They travel to the Dodgers tonight and face Clayton Kershaw, three-time Cy Young Award winner and probably the best pitcher on the planet. But good news for the Giants. Johnny Cueto will be taking the mound for the Giants. But his ERA is 5.10 so far in the year. Kershaw, 2.29. Dodgers a huge favorite. Minus 225. You're getting plus 205 with the Giants. And the Giants coming here lousy. They're 3-8 in their last 11 games. And the Dodgers, in Clayton Kershaw's last 52 home starts, the Dodgers are 40-12 in those games. And not to mention the fact that Kershaw faced off against these Giants last week and gave up one run in seven innings. A typical Kershaw performance. But the Dodgers are a little bit iffy right now. They're using a six-man pitching rotation. And if you saw the game last week with Clayton Kershaw, he didn't exactly look very comfortable out on the mound because he's got a calf problem. He was hobbling last week. Now, has all that healed up in 6 days? We'll find out tonight. But with the top starting pitchers in baseball seemingly going down like flies, you have to wonder how long it is before a guy like Kershaw, who missed a couple of months last year, goes down himself. And don't forget the Dodgers bullpen kind of taxed right now. Kenley Jansen, as money as it gets this side of Aroldis Chapman, got a save yesterday, but the setup guys to get them from Kershaw to Jansen, a complete mess right now. So the bridge between starter to closer, easily the Dodgers' weak point. Giants and Dodgers split 4 games last week. Cueto actually pitched decent against the Dodgers last week, going 6 innings, giving up 3 runs. But if you're going to give us a pitcher like Johnny Cueto getting over 2-1 odds, plus 205, yeah, I'll take it every day of the week. We'll take Cueto going up against the best pitcher in the world. We went against Kershaw last week. We're going to do it again this week. Johnny Cueto over Clayton Kershaw getting a big number at Dodger Stadium tonight. You can watch this one on MLB Network as Mark Melancon will trot in from the Giants bullpen in the ninth to close this one off for San Francisco as your Mac Daddy Stogie of the night. And you can take that bad boy to the desert and smoke it.
And that's all she wrote. It's a triumph of number crunching over the human spirit. And it's about time.
And that does it for the Monday, May 1st edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. As always, we thank you so much for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Bottom Line Lex. Email anytime, bottomlinelex@gmail.com. And make sure to like us on Facebook, the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.